Hi, hello, and welcome to episode 2 of the Dunker Spot, coming a little earlier than expected, but the NBA does not know how to sleep. I am your host, Nikias Duncan. I am once again joined by my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. Episode 2, an emergency pod, aka a Wyclef pod. I'm excited, juiced up. I'm ready to go.
It's some fun stuff, if you haven't heard, big move around the NBA today. Torian Prince has finally been traded. The Cleveland Cavaliers needed some front court depth. They finally have a four that can spread the floor. I think Torian Prince is going to be a pretty big ad for him. What do you think?
That's exactly why everyone's here. What a zig that would be if we just broke down the couch portion of this trade. That would be hilarious. Hey, a 10-minute emergency pod on Jared Allen going to the Cavs. That'd be fantastic.
It would be fantastic content. And we are going to talk about them a little bit. But first, we're going to lead with the star. James Harden got his way. It got a little ugly towards the end of the stint. Had a little bit of a mic drop during the post-game presser last night. He was very clear that this team, the Rockets, weren't good enough. They weren't close to the Lakers. And he's done literally everything he could do outside of move off the ball. And he decided, you know, he let it be known, like, we can't do it. And something needs to happen. And sure enough, you know, things got done.
That was a wild sequence of events. If you think about it, even just going back further, you had the Kyrie Irving on that Zoom meeting, and then Joel Embiid and KD lost their minds, and then James Harden did that, and then Boogie said what he said, and then James Harden got traded. Like, as soon as Boogie said, I was here for John Wall, I was like, oh, the trade is in.
Yeah, that's got to be it. And shout out to Steven Silas, kind of reading the room. He's like, you know what? We told James he should probably stay home. I think that's in his best interest. I don't think an aloof James Harden and a fired up DeMarcus Cousins needs to be in the same premises at the same time.
No. It's best for all parties involved.
Yeah, and as DeMarcus Cousins talked about during the Zoom calls today, he said, you know, the disrespect, he wasn't, you know, last night was obviously the big splash thing. He's like, the disrespect started earlier, like him coming into training camp the way that he did, coming in late and then, you know, performing and acting the way that he did. And he's like, ah, man, that's, we were already on the wrong foot there, which honestly, that's fair. Like, you know, look, put yourself in DeMarcus Cousins' shoes. Like, I've dealt with injury after injury after injury, bounced around, you know, Golden State, the Lakers, you know, I'm trying to get on a good team. Every time I feel like I'm building some momentum, I get hurt again. I come to Houston, like, let's build this thing out. And Russell Westbrook gets traded. And then James Harden very shortly demands his trade and then acts the way that he acts on and off the court. We don't have to get too deep into that. And then, again, you look at John Wall. Like, he's had his own injury struggles. He comes to Houston, fresh start. You know, he was the guy in Washington. And the ascension of Bradley Beal combined with his injuries kind of pushed him down the ladder a little bit. He loves that community in D.C. He gets traded away. He's ready for the fresh start. He's reunited with DeMarcus Cousins. They're all excited. New head coach. Everyone's excited. And James Harden is just like, I don't really feel like it. You know, this isn't it. Send me to Brooklyn. Send me to Philly. Send me anywhere but here because you guys aren't good enough. And they very rightfully took offense to that.
Yep. And now he's in Brooklyn. They sent him to Brooklyn.
He is in Brooklyn. So with him being in Brooklyn now, I don't want to get into – are the Nets contenders?
We're talking about the picks, right?
No. So much draft capital. But on the Nets front, like, I mean, the easy stuff, the narrative stuff is, you know, how is Steve Nash going to manage the personalities? How does Kyrie feel? Because there was some noise about him not wanting to trade. Don't know how true those rumors are. How is he going to feel? When is he going to come back? When he does come back, how is he going to feel about, I would assume, being demoted in terms of the hierarchy in handling the ball, because James Harden is James Harden and Kyrie Irving is a fantastic player, but he's not James Harden. What I want to get into is how this is going to look what the offense is going to look like, what the defense is going to look like from a schematic standpoint. You've watched plenty of Brooklyn this year. How do you see Steve Nash kind of implementing James Harden into the offense?
I think it's going to go more seamless than people think. I mean, yeah, there's only one ball. Shout out to whoever said Spalding when I asked who could guard the Nets, because there's only one ball. But I think what you saw was an ability to mold KD and Kyrie together early in the season, use them in actions together. They had a flow, two sides, and there's a lot of things that Brooklyn can do. I mean, they're off the top of my head. They can run pistol with those three right off the bat. You can deal with that right away. When you go more layered into it, you have three guys who can operate in different areas of the floor. And so you have to think about, and my mind goes to this first, you can run a pick and roll with KD, Kyrie, or James Harden and have both of those guys on the weak side. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that? You can run a pick and roll or a handoff, swing it, and now you have to deal with James Harden. And if you guard that, now you have to deal with Kyrie. So there's flow they can get to pretty easily. Obviously, you can use Kyrie as a screener for KD. You can use KD as a screener for Kyrie. You know, you can use KD as a screener for James Harden. So it's there's a lot of different ways that they can use them together. I think it's going to be fun to see it kind of come to life. You know, it's different than the Golden State trio where you could run through all three off ball screens. They could all do a bunch of different stuff. It's just hard to see who would come out. Right. You got three guys who can go get a bucket, and there's a lot of creative ways that you can use them.
I think they're obviously going to be fun to watch when they're all on the floor together. I think what makes this fit as seamless, at least as I project it to be, is that all three of these guys are elite shooters. So even if you just simplify things, as you said, if you just want to say Kyrie, catch the ball 30 feet from the basket, mismatch hunt, force a switch, isolate, they can just stand in one spot and like their defenders have to hug them because those guys are some of the greatest shooters ever. You know, James Harden does it more off the dribble than spotting up just because of his role. But he's a guy, if you park him in the corner or park him in the slot, like he can knock down catch and shoot opportunities. We have the sample that he can knock down those kind of shots. Kevin Durant is obviously one of the best shooters ever. Kyrie Irving is one of the best shooters ever. So you can simplify it that way. If you're looking at, you know, the early offense opportunities, I think they're just going to double drag it out. Honestly, you get a defensive rebound, or even if it's at their make, you have James Harden bringing it up. Kyrie has plenty of experience setting screens. You know, he operated in a lot of the flex stuff that Boston did. If you're going back to the Cleveland era, just the mismatch hunting that they did in playoff series with LeBron as the ball handler, Kyrie has plenty of experience screening there. So he can be a guy that screens and then pops out. You have Kevin Durant as a guy that can screen and pop out or dive to the basket. And then you can park a guy like DeAndre Jordan in the dunker spot if you want to. Shout out to the pod name. And from there, like, you just pick your poison. If teams switch that and James Harden is your primary ball handler, Harden can do his dance. I mean, he, you know, get into that step back if he wants to. He can attack, and you have a lob threat in DeAndre Jordan. He can kick it out weak side. There's Kyrie. There's Kevin Durant above the break. We haven't even mentioned Joe Harris, who is one of the best shooters. Yeah.
Joe Harris is going to be a big key. I think they can run a lot of actions just moving him around with those other pieces. It's going to be you're going to make a decision.
Yeah, you're going to have to make some very, very, very tough decisions. And like we haven't even mentioned like KD on the block, like dump it to him, get into that post split action. If you have Kyrie screening for James Harden, or if you have James Harden screening for Kyrie, you can have James Harden screening for Joe Harris. If they want to set up some of that elbow series stuff, you park KD in the high post, have a flat screen in the corner. You know, Joe Harris, you know, you don't think of him as like a dunk or anything like that, but he has been a high level finisher for years now. Just because teams are terrified of him around the perimeter, they run him off the line, and he has enough craft, has enough touch, has enough physicality to finish at the rim as well. So you can get those kind of easy buckets. You can, you know, reverse that action, have the screen being set for Kyrie. You know, he's one of the most talented finishers the league has ever seen. Can use all sides of the rim, all sides of the backboard, get finishes that way. Brooklyn's offense, I don't worry about it. Like, I think you can scheme those guys to be able to do just about anything. I think there's going to be a question about how much James Harden wants to do off the ball. I do think, you know, it's going to be natural for him to kind of spot up. But as far as someone setting up pin down for him as the other guys operate, if he's going to relocate when guys drive, those questions are there just because at points he hasn't had to do it. But also there have been times where you need him to do it, you know, looking at last year in particular, that he just hasn't. So, you know, it's fair to question the buy-in there. But I think in terms of the scheme, like, you know, Steve Nash is a creative offensive mind. Mike D'Antoni is there.
I
think they are going to be able to do whatever. And that's just talking about their starting lineup. If you're talking closing games out and you slide Kevin
Brown. You're not going Brown, are you?
Hmm?
I thought you were going to talk about Brown. You're not talking about Brown?
No. But I'm saying if you're looking at the end of games and you slide KD down to the five, if you slide in another shooter, or if you slide in a Jeff Green, the guy that can hang in a dunker spot or can spot up in the corners, now you're playing five out, and or you're running those actions, or you're just isolating at the top, or you're running a high pick and roll. Good luck. Good luck trying to defend those guys.
I agree. And I think one thing Brooklyn's shown is they're not afraid to move the ball from side to side. Mm-hmm. And they're not afraid to move their body. So obviously, you know, James is going to have to integrate himself in that. You saw Houston try and move him off with some more pin downs a little bit, but towards the end, you saw the spacing become a daily clip. Where's James Harden on this one? So I think he'll be able to integrate into that pretty quickly, and that ball movement's going to work out well. Now, what do you think about the fact that, and this just popped in my mind, we talk about them not maybe potentially being able to fit together. They can still give each one of them a lineup.
That's very much true. I think that's the luxury in general of having three superstars, or, you know, two superstars and a star, depending on how you define Kyrie, is that you can have at least one of those guys on the floor at all times. So I think that's going to be huge, in particular for the Kyrie James Harden pairing. Because if we do get into a situation to where James Harden still isn't relocating off the ball, or he isn't setting solid screens off the ball, or he's not flying off pin downs or whatever, then you just stagger those guys early. I think the staggering is going to be important just because Spencer Dinwiddie is out. So you're going to want to have one of those guys kind of running the actions. Yeah. You know, I mean, Caris LeVert is gone now. So that, you know, makes it even more important for them to have that secondary ball handler. Mm-hmm. So I think, in a worst case scenario, if you want to call it that, you start those three guys together. You give Kyrie the early break, since, you know, James Harden is used to playing those 10, 11 minute stints anyway. You give him the break. You bring James Harden to the bench around the, you know, the 10 minute mark of the first or whatever, or 10, you know, 10 minutes on. So 2 minute mark of the first, bring Kyrie back in, you let him run the second unit, and you just kind of stagger it that way. You know, you could pair Kevin Durant, however you want to do it. Short stints, medium stints, whatever. But that, having that level of ball handling, having that level of shot creation on the floor at all times, that is going to, I think, minimize the lack of depth that they have in terms of creation on the bench. Because it's easy to say that, I mean, again, Spencer Dinwiddie's out. Caris LeVert was up and down this season, but, you know, he was a guy that could get a bucket whenever.
Oh, he's going to score that thing. He's going to put the ball in the bucket. Make no mistake about that.
There it is. So, you know, they are going to miss a little bit of that in terms of just the depth on the roster. But when you're substituting that with James Harden, who could be an offense onto himself for extended stretches, for a Kyrie Irving that when push comes to shove, he can ISO you to death and take shots that you want him to take and make them anyway, then maybe a larger role for Timothy Luwawu-Cabarrot isn't going to be a big deal, because a guy like Kyrie or a guy like Harden, depending on how they stagger it, is going to be on the floor, and they're going to command so much attention that they're going to create easier opportunities for those other guys.
No, I think one thing with the trade is offensively, they have their wing guys on the bench are still pretty solid. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't lose much of the core. You still have TLC, you still have Brown, you still have Shamet. The question, of course, to me is going to be, can they get enough big man play to where they don't have to consistently run Jeff Green at the five, which you could do. But I think you would like to keep your smaller lineups in the back pocket. Just my thought. It's going to be interesting. The first thing I tweeted out, who can guard all three? Who can guard all three? I want to hear it because I got 9 million responses.
The first team that I thought about of teams that could defend all three, I went Milwaukee first.
Okay. Holiday, Middleton, Giannis.
Holiday, Middleton, Giannis. If you want to save Middleton, then you have Dante DiVincenzo. He's one heck of a defender. I think he is a little thin to defend James Harden, so that might get a little tough if he starts getting downhill.
Ooh, but now you're getting to the secret sauce of the question. But keep going.
So Milwaukee is the team that came to my mind first. The Lakers are definitely there.
All right, because you got LeBron, AD. Who's the third?
LeBron, AD. I think you go between KCP and Caruso for Kyrie.
Okay.
And I think if you feel like Kyrie can bait KCP or Caruso, which, I mean, that wouldn't surprise me, the Lakers have so much length at the basket. They have so much on the backside that can kind of help there. I think it turns Kyrie into a contested shot maker, which he's still in his zone. Mm-hmm. But I don't worry too much about Kyrie breaking down Alex Caruso and then getting to the paint and finishing at will. Because if he does that, you're still going to have Anthony Davis at the rim. Or if you have KD stashed out in the perimeter, you don't have him, you still have Marc Gasol at the rim. He can't really move, but like.
Here you go again.
You know, here you go again. I mean, he doesn't move well laterally at this point.
All right. But, so the Lakers. No, I'm just kidding. All right. So you got the Lakers. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I got the Bucks. I got the Lakers. I think the Sixers would also be there.
I was disappointed that no one said that to me except like two people. So shout out to both of y'all. I'm surprised. The length, the size, they can throw bodies at them. That's all I'm saying.
Right. So the Sixers can do it. And
Miami.
Miami can match up with them. They would have to start Avery Bradley. But if they do start Avery Bradley, it's Bradley on Kyrie. Jimmy Butler has to take the James Harden assignment, which is not something that he's going to like shy away from at all.
Okay.
And then you have an interesting dilemma if you're Eric Spoelstra. Because if it's up to Bam Adebayo, he will defend Kevin Durant for 48 minutes. If you're Eric Spoelstra, you probably do not want Bam to defend Kevin Durant for 48 minutes. Because all it will take is a pump fake and a rip through, and that's a foul, and that's a foul on Bam. And then, you know, I just worry about that. Like, in terms of ability, like, yes, Bam has the lateral quickness, he has the length to defend really just about anyone. But if you're thinking it from Spo's perspective, I don't think he wants to give Bam that matchup from the jump. I think that's a series, if they meet up in the playoffs, I think that's a series where you start a guy like Mo Harkless or someone at the four, you stash him on KD, make him take his lumps, and then you just, you know, you send Bam for extra help.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe when you get late into a game, Bam just takes on that challenge, or Spo allows Bam to take on that challenge. Yeah. So Miami can do it. I wouldn't put them on the same level as like a Milwaukee or a Lakers in their ability to defend those guys.
What about Boston?
Boston was one of the first teams I thought about because they do have Jason Tatum. They do have Jaylen Brown. I worry about the third. Oh, you know what? I forgot Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart.
Man.
I was just like, oh, man, Kemba's out. He can't do it. Peyton Pritchard. I just completely blanked on Marcus Smart. I did. In that case, Boston is absolutely on the list then.
The Celtics fans are about to put you in the dunker spot.
Oh, man. that they are. And it's crazy because Marcus Smart is legitimately one of my favorite players. I'm not – they're just a brain fart on my part. So Boston's on the list.
Boston's on the list, and I think someone said the Clippers as well. Now, the reason why I bring that up, there are teams that can match up with them more than you probably think of initially. What about players 4 and 5 on those teams? And this is where I bring up that they have 3 mismatch hunters. 3 guys they can use to bend your defense, depending on who you have out there. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is the secret sauce. And that is what I want to see. How teams handle that portion of it. Because you can put your 3 up there. You can match up. What do you do on that fourth or fifth man, that screen, that's a drop coverage or it's a switch, a mismatch you don't want? Now you got a decision to make. And that's the interesting part that I want to see. So, yeah. Ooh. And shout out to everyone who told me, who can they guard? No, that wasn't the point.
Oh, we're going to get there. We're going to get there. No, actually, we're going to get there right now. Brooklyn. Well,
who can they guard? Who can they guard? Come on.
Who can they guard? They can guard. They can guard me. Oh. They can guard you. Oh man, I don't know. Like
you don't have high hopes for this defense.
I do not have high hopes for this defense. I will say, in terms, if we're looking at it within the lens of James Harden's acquisition, I think it's going to be a pretty seamless one. Getting provided some secret numbers from Second Spectrum. Brooklyn switches at the 8th highest rate in the league. And in terms of the points allowed per possession on pick and rolls that are switched, they are 5th in terms of points per possession allowed. Mm-hmm. If you have James Harden on your team, you're going to be a switch team, period. He's not a guy that is going to fight over screens. You can't drop with him. He's going to switch. He's going to use his strength to bother guys in the post. If they try to turn around for a quick hook or for a turnaround, he's going to flash those hands. He's going to swipe at the ball. He's going to get steals that way. If you have James Harden on your roster, you are going to switch. So it is helpful that the Nets already switch at a pretty high rate, and mm-hmm. they have done so efficiently to this point.
Yeah, they like to switch and deny. And I didn't mean to interrupt you, but they like to switch and deny. So mm-hmm. they're based on that activity. They want to keep the ball in front, try and stay at a rotation that way. Make you keep moving, keep grinding the clock. Mm-hmm. But as you continue, there's some issues with that, right?
Yes, because while the Nets switch and they have switched well, it is fair to point out that while Kyrie Irving has stepped up his defensive effort this season, he still is not a stopper by any means. And Kyrie has now been out for a good little bit. And it's fair to note that, you know, with those switching numbers being as good as they are overall, a lot of that is Kyrie Irving being replaced by Bruce Brown, who is a noticeably better defender. Mm-hmm. So I do think once you get into playing major minutes with Kyrie, James Harden, Kevin Durant on the floor, DeAndre Jordan on the floor, Joe Harris on the floor, who is a good defender. I want to give Joe Harris his props. I do think there are weak points. I do think if you get late in the games, and if they do have DeAndre Jordan on the floor, you're going to have a natural attack point because the Nets do not want to switch DeAndre Jordan. You are going to be able to get into, you're able to get pull-ups against DeAndre Jordan in a drop. You're able to get shots coming off of handoffs against DeAndre Jordan in a drop. I think that's what really makes a potential Miami series very interesting, because if those games are close, Miami can, what they've done a lot more this year, they can kind of clear out a side. They'll have Duncan Robinson come off a pin down in the middle of the floor, and then he'll jet to the corner off of a handoff from Bam. And if the big man does not show on that, Duncan Robinson has a wide open corner three. Like, he's fading out of bounds, but that's a good shot for him. He's mm-hmm. going to have that. If the big does show too high, show too early, then that's a slip for Bam. That's a dump off, and then Bam's at the rim. So I worry about how Brooklyn defends a team like Miami that has those movement shooters that way, that can attack and drop. Mm-hmm. Go back to Boston. If Kemba Walker is healthy, Kemba Walker has been boogieing in high pick and rolls for a very, very, very long time.
Yeah.
And now you have, you know, Daniel Tice, who is one of the better screeners in the league, Tristan Thompson, who is one of the better screeners in the league. You know, you're going to drop with DeAndre Jordan. Kemba Walker is going to walk into pull-ups whenever he wants to. And, you know, Jason Tatum, fantastic pull-up shooter. Mm-hmm. And can get into that side step three if he has to, if he wants to reject the screen or whatever. Jaylen Brown has improved immensely as a pull-up shooter this year. We'll see how sustainable that is. But if it is, he's another guy that can attack DeAndre Jordan in space, can get to the pull-up when he wants to.
Now, I'll add a counter just real quick.
Okay.
I mean to cut you off, but, like, could you make an argument that DeAndre Jordan being in a drop helps their defense? Because if they know they're giving up that pull-up, that's what they're giving up.
I think it's certainly the lesser of evils. I think in general, I mean, if you're in a drop in general, you want to give up long twos. Like you don't want to give up. It's long twos or contested floaters. You don't want to give up those elbow jumpers. You don't want to give up pull-up threes. I worry about Boston. I worry about Miami because the way that they attack drop coverages, they're designed to get those threes. So I think, you know, Kemba in particular, I mentioned double drag a little bit earlier. Like, I think Trae Young is probably the only guy over the last couple of years that has run more of those double drag looks than Kemba Walker has. And that's with the injury issues. So, you know, Kemba's been doing that since the Charlotte days. So Boston can just extend those screens. And, you know, Kemba's attacking 35 feet from the basket. Mm-hmm. And then he can walk into those pull-ups if DeAndre Jordan isn't out there.
Yes.
So I very much worry about the Boston matchup. And again, Miami doesn't attack it in that way, though they're giving Tyler Hero those reps as the lead ball handler. I think that's going to loom large moving forward. Mm-hmm. Miami wants to attack with handoffs. They can clear a side and just kind of do it that way. And Miami, you know, opposed to Boston, Miami has a stretch big in Kelly Olynyk. So they can simplify it even more. Since they're starting him now, you run a pick and pop with Kelly Olynyk. DeAndre Jordan is not coming out there. And Kelly Olynyk, as awkward as he is, if you do switch that, you know, Kelly Olynyk can just kind of bump and grind his way into post-ups and cheat fouls, and it looks ugly but he can do that. So I think I worry about the weak points that Brooklyn has in that rate.
No, it's going to be interesting because Brooklyn has, even pre-trade, just some defensive flaws, I guess would be the word I would say. Mm-hmm. With the switching that they do, and it's kind of an automatic, you know, based on action, they'll just kind of switch. Sometimes they switch themselves into a mismatch. Even, you know, I was watching them play the Knicks. Julius Randle had Joe Harris a couple times. They doubled, and it just didn't look great, the rotations out of it. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the Knicks couldn't make them pay, but they need to have that kind of rhythm defensively. If you're going to switch, you got to be able to know when to kick your guy out, when to double, when to rotate.
Right.
And it's going to put them in those kind of positions where now they may switch themselves into a mismatch, or a poor switch ends up with cutting. So the teams that cut and move, which, you know, in today's league is a lot of them, they're going to have an issue with potential dribble handoffs. So I think pick and roll, as you've stated, is going to be a concern, but they've got to get their base up as well. You know, especially if you're going to have those three in the same lineup, which they, of course, will. You gotta get tougher. You got to get stronger. You got to keep the ball in front, and you got to get better at the switches. The switching and the denying and the activity is great, but if teams continue to grind you, what are you going to do afterwards?
Yeah, that's going to be the big thing, and that's going to really put more of a spotlight on James Harden if he ends up off the ball. Because I think as James Harden's defensive rep has been interesting to track, because he was pretty good in OKC, and then that waned as he got a bigger role in Houston, and then you get the big...
Well, it became a meme.
It became a meme. He had the big blooper reel on YouTube, that long video of him just not being there. And then it's kind of been on the upswing as people have, you know, noticed that he is a stout post defender. He does have quick hands. He does have decent anticipation in terms of reading the passing lanes. But it's the one constant criticism for him that's definitely fair is he will ball watch. He will get lost off the ball, and guys kind of back cut him that way. So for a team like Brooklyn, that they're already going to have to work pretty hard. Mm-hmm. I think teams are going to go after DeAndre Jordan in those drops, and that's going to put, you know, the onus is going to be on those guys to rotate behind that. If James Harden gets caught ball watching, that just exacerbates those issues. So he's going to have to be more locked in than he ever has off ball. Because on ball, I don't really worry about it. You know, he's just going to switch whatever screens comes his way. And if you try to post him up, you know, good luck. He's a strong dude and he has those quick hands. It's off the ball that's going to be the issue. And for a team like the Nets, that, again, DeAndre Jordan, he's a fine rim protector, but you don't want him in space. You don't want Kevin Durant having to put so much work in on the defensive end. You don't want him to be your primary weak side guy. You're going to want everyone to be kind of locked in on the screen there. James Harden is going to have to do his part for this to work.
Yeah, I think, as you say, he's improved on the weak side. I think when he's locked in, and not ball watching, he can make some plays, good position defender. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that. And then, you know, DeAndre Jordan, I think he's got the smarts and the knowledge of most of the plays in the NBA. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be, can he find it in between? Mm-hmm. You know, can he find a way to potentially get up to the level and maybe fall back? You know, not a deep drop, but be at the level, slide back, and maybe give his guy a chance to get back.
Right, right.
We'll see, though. We'll see. So, I mean, that's a lot of talk about a team that no one thinks will be able to guard.
This is true. This is true.
That's what we're here for. That's what we're here for.
It's true. We got to break it on down, man. We got to break it on down. So James Harden is in Brooklyn, which means there is a new shooting guard in Houston. We thought it was going to be Caris LeVert for about 4 minutes, and then it was not. It ends up being Victor Oladipo, who is now a Houston Rocket. He's going to be chopping it up with John Wall, with DeMarcus Cousins. They are all going to have chips on their shoulders, so I think it's going to be a fun team to watch. How do you see Victor Oladipo fitting in offensively in Houston?
I think it's a really good fit. I think with what Houston was trying to run, even with Harden, without Harden in the lineup, I think he slides right in. Obviously, you can push the ball, run pick and roll. You can run him off screens. You can run him off handoffs. He can open up a lot of things. And obviously, being in a contract year, you're going to get the best effort from him. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's going to be a massive transition. Obviously, if John Wall could make it work with James Harden, I'm sure he can make it work with Victor Oladipo. So you're still going to have pick and roll weapons with Christian Wood. You're still going to have two guys that can space, and you can run multiple actions for them. So I think it's going to be pretty fun to see how that works. I like that Houston went ahead and got Oladipo. You know, let's stabilize it for a year, see what we got, and then see what goes on the next year. You know, you're going to get the best from him. How do you see Vic fitting in Houston?
I think it's going to be a pretty clean fit. I mean, first things first, he's not James Harden. He's not the shooter that he is. He's not the creator that he is. So there's a very clear talent upgrade. However, I do think, and I said this during the immediate trade reaction stream that I did with Alice Kennedy and Spencer Davies earlier today. We are recording almost 11 p.m. Eastern time here on Wednesday night. But earlier today, I went on the stream and I said, you know, there's going to be a dip in talent. There's going to be a dip in efficiency. But I do think early on, at least, Houston's offense is going to flow a lot better. Because I think there has been an emphasis from Coach Silas to implement more off-ball movement, more relocation when guys drive. And John Wall has proven that he can get downhill on a whim still. So I think that Victor Oladipo has shown that he's willing to move off the ball and relocate after drives. He's definitely shown those flashes early on this year in Indiana's new offense, that revamped offense. You know, Nate Jorgensen has those guys going downhill. They have them all, you know, they're posting up DeMontis Sabonis as much as they do. They got cuts going on. You know, Malcolm Brogdon can get to the rim whenever. So it's imperative to relocate, kind of get into passive line of sight, that kind of thing. So Victor Oladipo is going to do that. And I think that simple thing is going to open up more looks.
So yeah, I agree with you. And I think it'll eliminate some of the push and pull. You know, you saw they came out of the gate. They looked great. They looked like they had a mix of what James was doing, what Silas wanted to do. And then it just kind of fell off a cliff. And
yeah,
it looked like a push and pull. So now you can do what you're trying to do. And you have a guy who, you talk about the talent difference, a guy who you could probably run more actions for.
Yes.
You can get more involved. You can run more things and use him in that way. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. How bad do you feel for Christian Wood? And I have a reason why you think. I have a response.
Okay. I don't feel super bad for him just because from what I've read outside of the payday, because, duh, you want to get your money. One of the biggest reasons that he chose Houston was because of his relationship that he already built with Stephen Silas back in Charlotte, I believe. So with that being the case, you know, I feel bad that, you know, James Harden isn't there, so Houston isn't going to be a fringe contender. But I do think Christian Wood is going to be fine. John Wall is still a tremendous pick and roll guy. Victor Oladipo can make the basic reads and pick and roll. He can get downhill. I think, you know, I don't think Christian Wood's going to be missing out on too many lob opportunities or anything like that. So I don't feel too bad for him.
This is the irony of all this entire time. Christian Wood was probably the best pick and roll partner that James Harden has had in the Houston Rocket uniform. And it happened to be the year that James Harden had no interest in playing in Houston.
Ooh, okay, so that is a little bit spicy, I feel.
tell me, who is the big who could roll and pop like Christian Wood that James Harden played with?
Isaiah Hartenstein. Okay.
Oh, but, all right. Hey, we had a great show, guys. Oh, man, come on Monday.
I'm kidding. But no, I guess if you're just looking at the different ways, then yeah, Christian Wood is definitely the most versatile pick and roll partner he's had. I think when you just limit it to best, then I think the first year of Dwight Howard, I think it's still there.
I'll downgrade my take then. Versatile. I'll use that instead of best.
Okay, so the versatile, yes, I agree, because Christian Wood has been fantastic offensively.
Oh, he's been great, and he's going to get those shots up.
Oh, he's absolutely going to get those shots up. What was the quote earlier? He said, I'm going to make this team a contender, whether they like it or not. I'm just like, well, that's an odd shot at James Harden, but I respect where he's coming from. Like, hey, we still have talent on the roster. I'm showing out. We still have good ball handlers here, so I'm going to continue to show out. And again, I just like the collective mood of these guys. You know, I'm obviously not in the locker room. Nobody should be. We're in a pantomime.
Yeah, there's a whole pandemic.
Yeah, we're in a pastrami out here. But like DeMarcus Cousins wants to prove something. John Wall wants to prove something. Victor Oladipo wants to prove something.
You're expecting a post-trade bump from the Rockets.
I am expecting a little bit of a post-trade bump from the Rockets. Okay. I tweeted it earlier. Like, I think if they do keep the roster intact, I mean, there have already been some rumblings about, you know, teams inquiring about PJ Tucker's availability and things of that, like that. So, you know, obviously Houston can decide to pivot at any time. But if they do keep the roster and they're whatever version of healthy we're going to see this year, because this is a really, really weird season, man.
Extremely. I know we're talking and analyzing in a year where it's very awkward to talk and analyze because no idea what you're watching is true, but it's there.
Yes, exactly. But like, if they keep the core intact, like I tweeted, I think this is still a playoff team. Now, I think they lose in the first round, whoever they play.
Okay.
And maybe it's a play-in situation. But, like, I expect if they stay together and they stay healthy, like, I think this team is good enough to be a 7 or 8 seed. I think there's enough talent there. There are enough guys that have reason to play 5%, 7%, 8% above their heads. You know, contract years, fighting back from injury, bouncing back from awkward seasons. If you're looking at a guy like Eric Gordon, you know, Eric Gordon has looked, you know, the shot hasn't fallen. But in terms of comfort, he looks a lot more comfortable. You know, he has a solidified role. He's happy that he's coming off the bench and knows that he's coming off the bench instead of starting for 2 weeks, then coming off the bench and Daniel House takes the spot. And then you know, like he is looking more comfortable with the certainty of his role in the offense, having more movement. We mentioned the pistol action with Brooklyn that they're going to run. I mean, every team in the league runs some variation of pistol, but you know, you have more of that from Eric Gordon getting them downhill instead of primarily being the guy spotting up 28, 30 feet from the basket. So he's getting more touches. Like, there's a recipe for this to be a pretty good team. You know, again, I don't think they're going to get the 8 seed and then beat the Lakers in 6 or anything like that. But I think this could be a playoff team. Like, I'm excited to see what Houston looks like post-trade.
Do you have any concern about Victor Oladipo possibly shooting too many threes?
If he shoots them like he's been shooting them in the calendar year of 2021, absolutely.
Okay. That's fair.
That's going to be a problem. The shooting splits for him in 2021, and it's 5-game sample. He didn't play last night against the Golden State Warriors. 34, 27, 69 in 2021. That is not going to cut it.
Now, that's what gets you the bubble slander that Victor Oladipo got. That's
yes.
That shooting is what gets you that.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
This is, Yes. So he has gotten to the rim a little bit more than he did last year, particularly in the bubble, but he still isn't getting there at 2017-18 levels. So I would like to see him get downhill more. I think he's going to be in a spot in Houston to where he's going to warrant a little bit more involvement offensively. I mean, in Indiana, he was still averaging 20, but he was very, very firmly the third guy there. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very much, we're going to run this through Sabonis, and then if it breaks down, it's Broad, and then if it breaks down again, then it's Depot. I think in Houston, it's going to be Wall running in action, and then it's going to be Depot running in action. Mm-hmm. Or it's going to be Wall directing traffic at the top while Victor Oladipo comes off a pin down or something, and then he's going to be the primary attacker. So I think he's going to be put in positions to get him downhill more. Mm-hmm. And I think good things are going to happen. Like, I don't think he's a 27% three-point shooter. Like, that's going to come back up. He's shooting 30%, about 36% from three on the year. Even as he looked not himself last year, the catch and shoot numbers were good. The pull-up numbers were awful. So I think at bare minimum, he's going to knock down the catch and shoot threes. So I don't really worry about that too much. And I think he's going to be fine if he stays upright.
So Rockets fans will not be saying Oladipo no.
This is twice, man. This is two shows in a row.
Boom. So we're in agreement. The Rockets are going to be looking in the right direction.
I think they're going to be looking in the right direction. And what about the
Pacers?
Let's go Pacers. Let's do it.
I think you have an interesting take. I think we disagree on this one. So I'm going to let you go first.
I am not super high on the fit with Caris LeVert.
Now, is this an on-court fit?
This is an
on-court long-term fit. Just an on-court fit. Okay.
I think it's just an on-court fit.
Okay.
Because so much of what Indiana does is predicated on quick decisions and keeping the ball moving. Again, the offense starts with Domantas Sabonis in the low post if he's posting, or if it's high post, go for a dribble handoff. And from there, you fly off the corner, and then you get to the rim. Indiana still leading the league in rim attempts. You get to the rim, or you touch the paint, and then you kick it out. Caris LeVert is a bucket getter. He's not a quick decision maker, and he's not a particularly good decision maker.
Ooh.
So
a little bit of spice over there.
So yeah, so within that lens, I am a little bit concerned about how he fits into Victor Oladipo's spot. I don't think he is the shooter that Victor Oladipo is. Not that he's a bad shooter, but I mean, he's firmly average. So
gotcha.
I think they're going to be guarded slightly differently off the ball, and that may cramp up the offense a little bit. And I think that's where you may miss having a guy like TJ Warren that can slide in at the four and kind of can pull guys out that way. Miles Turner's had a hot start, but teams don't run him off the line either, which is interesting considering his shooting pedigree. So I'm kind of worried about how he's going to be defended off ball. And I worry about what he does with the ball in his hands with the starting unit, at least. Now, if this is a situation to where Indy wants to start Aaron Holiday or, you know, go three guard look and then you bring Caris LeVert off the bench, then maybe I feel a little bit better about it because, like, he's still a very talented player. And again, a guy that if the shot clock hits eight and your initial action didn't work, he can get downhill. He can get to his pull up. You know, he can put the ball in the hoop. I just worry about the fit. You know, Indy is really flowing offensively.
Now, I'd counter with which Caris LeVert are we going to see? So in the bubble and this season when he got that six-man role and when everyone was hurt, we've seen supreme bucket getter Caris LeVert, right? Mm-hmm. He's gone out and getting buckets all the time. Are we going to see that? Or are we going to see the LeVert that was moving and cutting dribble handoffs under Kenny Atkinson? Now, does that hurt Caris LeVert? Does that hurt his production? Mm-hmm. Does it enhance him? That's going to be the key part. I think that he can fit into what Indiana does, mainly because of the pace and the opportunity. Mm-hmm. I think that in the bubble, he showed an ability to make those reads and make those plays. The scoring helped, but he was able to get some assists. When Toronto went ahead and said, hey, anybody but you, he was able to make some plays. So it's going to be him having to grow into that portion of it. I think you can put him in handoffs. You can obviously put him in pick and roll, and he's going to be a bucket getter in a way that defenses will probably grow to put more attention to. You know, with Oladipo, as tough as he is, you could probably live with the drop. Hope you get a contest. Maybe he's not making his pull up, and hope for the best. With LeVert, he's shown that ability to snake it, keep his man behind him, hit the man rolling, maybe hit that pull up score. So that's where I think that LeVert can grow into that role. And even from a bigger picture standpoint, they needed to get somebody, you know? They couldn't just lose Oladipo for nothing. So you get a young guy, you know what you're going to pay him for the next few years, and you let him go. So that should help late game when it's Brogdon and now LeVert with Sabonis. So I would think I'm a little higher on it than you might be.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Part of his inconsistencies, I think that also contributes to me being a little bit skeptical of the fit. I mean, we have seen two different LeVerts, and the other part of that is virtually every season of Caris LeVert's career has featured some sort of injury. And now that he's switching teams and going into a new system, it's going to be very important for him to stay on the floor, as basic and as dull as that sounds. He's going to need that continuity. He's going to need that time to get acclimated. So if we do see the right LeVert, then I think he's going to be fine. I just have to see it. I'm coming into it naturally lower. And if he proves me wrong, then fine. I won't be surprised by it at all. And our last team, the team we technically led off with, but the team that we're now going to seriously discuss is the Cleveland Cavaliers, who made out like bandits, I feel like. Just kind of snuck into the trade and got Jared Allen.
And oh, yeah, they snuck right in at the last minute. Say, yeah, we're good. We in.
Yeah, like sure, just sitting, you know, just sitting at the back of the room, slowly raise your hand, like, hey, I'll take it. And sure enough, they get Jared Allen, they get Taurean Prince. First and foremost, good for them for getting bodies that can play right now.
Well, yeah, ever since you praised them, everyone got hurt and they haven't won.
Yeah, like I feel kind of bad about it. Like I know it's not my fault, but also I feel a little bit responsible. I'm just like, hey, man, they still have the best defense in the league.
There you go.
So there we go. My point still stands, darn it. They're still doing the darn thing. They just don't have guards. Shout out Damian Dotson playing some point guard. That's fun. But you know, you add Taurean Prince, a guy that can defend a couple of positions, that can knock down some shots. He still has not hit the Atlanta levels, which is a little bit disappointing, but he's very firmly an eighth man, you know, a body up front that can play the three or the four. Jared Allen is obviously the prize here. Getting a guy that is a tremendous rim runner, a good screener, a good rim protector. He's still incredibly thin, and I still worry about the rebounding. So I think that caps the ceiling a little bit, but he's going to fit into what Cleveland does already. Like, he has the mobility to play up to the level of screen defensively. He can obviously drop if you're going to the Kenny Atkinson days defensively. So Brooklyn would basically run a one player zone. They just kind of stash Jared Allen at the basket and have everyone play man around him. So he can play in that deep drop. He can play higher up. You know, they can show and recover with him. And I think more than anything, you know, you have another young guy in the pipeline. It makes the front court decisions in terms of, you know, Kevin Love, Andre Drummond. It makes those decisions very interesting. I do not anticipate both Drummond and Love finishing the season as members of the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Makes sense. That it seems like a headache. They have 90 big men. But to your point, Jared Allen is the big win. To get that for almost next to nothing is a huge victory. You add more youth, you add a big as a centerpiece, and then you have some leverage as far as when it comes to Drummond, when it comes to Love being able to make those moves from a little bit of position of power. You don't have to just take any offer. So I like that. Taurean Prince, I'm trying to figure out how he fits on this team. You have Okoro. you have Chetty Osmond still. They like to play big. So, you know, where does the bulk of his minutes come? Unfortunately, I hope he doesn't get squeezed out because he can still play. Do you think at any point in this season, we will see an Andre Drummond, Jared Allen, JaVale McGee, Larry Nance, Kevin Love lineup?
No, I cannot say that I expect to see that. I would love to see it. If we've seen Thon Maker at the three, darn it, give me Kevin Love at point guard.
I kind of want to see it.
Like, I want to see it, man. Like, throw out like a 2-3 or a 3-2 zone on the other end and just – or just switch everything. I mean, they're all bigs anyway. And just mash dudes.
I want to see what they try and do offensively.
Just mash dudes. It's just going to be high-low passes from the inbounds all the way up to the rim. That's just going to be it.
Oh, so this pretty much – Jared Allen, Andre Drummond, it's kind of – it might be time for him, right? If I'm reading the tea properly.
Yeah. Because, like, I would feel for Jared Allen if he starts, they bring in DeAndre Jordan because he's in, you know, Kevin Durant's fade five. And then he gets demoted to a bench role, ends up starting again because it's clear that he's the better player. And then he gets traded to Cleveland, where Andre Drummond's averaging like 18 to 15, and he's back to being the sixth man. Like, he's shown enough to be a starter in this league.
Yeah, I kind of like to see him unleashed. I want to see what that looks like. You know, he's kind of at the point as a player where we know who he is. He's talented. I want to see what the next step is. You know what I'm saying? It kind of reminds me, it's not the same scenario, but when Nurkic was in Denver. Yeah. I knew Nurkic had something. I didn't know all what it was until, you know, he moved on. Then you see it. Or, you know, maybe this is just for next year when, you know, Drummond's not there anymore. It's just future stash. You never know.
I will ask you this question and we will close things out.
Okay.
Andre Drummond, Kevin Love. If the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to trade one of them, who do you think is most likely to be moved between those two?
Drummond. I think his size, his ability to rebound, and if he continues to show the improved defensive effort, someone will buy into that. It should be Kevin Love because of his skill set. We need to get him out of Cleveland, please. but I think it would be Drummond. I think it'd be more likely. Now, obviously, contract situation makes it a little bit different, but I'm going to go Drummond. What do you think?
I would also say Drummond. I would anticipate a team like Boston just kind of monitoring that just in case they do need some added size. Tristan Thompson has been good. Daniel Tice has been good. They're still both 6'8", 6'9", at the end of the day. And Joel Embiid looks like the MVP. So at a certain point, it would not surprise me if one of those middle-tier Eastern teams or a team like Boston is like, you know what, we might face Philly, and we might need someone that Joel Embiid want throw into the washing machine. So I think Drummond's going to be the easier guy to move. Especially, I mean, he's playing well. He's healthy, first and foremost. Like, that's going to be the big thing that swings it. And, you know, he's proven, like, he can anchor a drop. You know, he's another guy that you can play high up. He has some of the quickest hands in the league among big men. Obviously, probably the best rebounder we've seen since Moses Malone. So there's a clear role for him. You don't want him shooting threes. Jesus, we don't need him shooting any more threes. No. But, I mean, good passer. Like, he can fit on a contender. So I do think he's the easier guy to move. I think he's the one that moves if Cleveland does decide to move one of those guys.
That makes sense. I got to sneak one more thing in.
All right.
Do you believe that Houston really asked Philly for Ben Simmons, Tyrese Maxey, Matisse Thybulle, and picks?
That would not surprise me, no.
Do you agree that's wild?
I do agree that it's wild.
Okay.
I think in a vacuum, you know, James Harden is, again, one of the best offensive players ever. He's a future Hall of Famer. He's still very firmly a top six player in the league. He was loafing it, and he was still putting up numbers. So you know what he brings. However, Ben Simmons is very young. and he is in year one of a 5-year extension. Tyrese Maxey's on a rookie contract. Matisse Thybulle's on a rookie contract. You're asking for first-round picks, so those would very obviously be rookie contracts. And Houston doesn't – they do have leverage because James Harden has 2 years on the deal before the option. But also, James Harden publicly quit on his team. And when you're negotiating with that working against you, like, ask for a lot, but you can't ask for that and expect it. You can't, I mean, you can ask for anything you want, but you can't expect that. That's just not going to happen.
No, that's nuts. And then I wanted to throw this out here.
Okay.
It's 2021, right? So yes. 5 years ago today.
Okay.
Brooklyn Nets defeated the New York Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
Their top three scorers. Do you know who they were?
5 years ago, so this is 2016.
It's 2016, yes.
2016. Is this the 16-17 season or 15-16 season?
15-16.
Okay, so Steph has to be up there. I think KD and Harden would be the other two. How did I do?
No. I'll tell you the top three scorers for the Nets on this day, 5 years ago.
Oh, for the Nets?
For the Nets.
Oh, see, I thought it was league-wide. I'm sorry. Oh, I was way off then.
It's synergy because they played the Knicks tonight, and 5 years ago they
Oh, got you.
Their top three scorers, Brooke Lopez,
mm-hmm.
Thaddeus Young.
Ooh, okay.
Shane Larkin
is a name I have.
Yep. And it's today they walk away with James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving.
Wow. Shout out to the Shane Larkin reference on the podcast.
I had to get one in.
Miami legend, Shane Larkin. Infuriating change of pace guard for the Dallas Mavericks for like 2 weeks, Shane Larkin.
And then that's how we end the emergency James Harden pod.
That is how we end the pod. Oh my goodness. Shane Larkin is not a name I've thought about in years. And we have to end on a high note there. We got to end it right there. Thank you. Oh, man. Thank you for listening to the second episode of The Dunker Spot. Rate, review, subscribe.
Please tell a friend, rate, review, subscribe. Let's blow this thing up.
We are on Apple Podcasts. We're on Spotify. We're on Stitcher. We should be on Google Podcasts soon if we're not already. And a thing that I somehow forgot to do at the end of the first episode, you can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve Jones Jr. at Steve Jones 20 on Twitter. Do I have that right? Jones 20. There we
right
go.
Right on the money.
So follow us and our basketball content. I'm going to have some written words on the James Harden trade relatively soon. You can check out Mr. Jones' Twitter feed. He's live tweeting all kinds of games. Matter of fact, let's end it right here. Well, one of your games of the week was Hornets-Knicks.
Come on, man. And so what a great show. The Dunkers live Mondays.
I turned on that game like, you know what? Fine. You know, he kind of convinced me to watch. It's going to be a nice stylistic clash. And the Hornets go up 10-0 in like the first 30 seconds. So I'm just like, you know what? I'm not. I didn't sign up to watch RJ Barrett miss these many shots. This is what I want to do. Like, the game ended up being decent, but man, that was not very fun. It looks like the Knicks are on the downswing. I think it's happening.
Yeah, they did the Tibbs thing. They scored like 88 points 3 games in a row. Not my best look, but hey, we'll do it later.
There we go. I had to throw that in just because of the Cavs dig earlier.
Hey, I'll take that out. It's fine.
There we go. And with that, thank you for listening to the episode. Again, we're on Apple, we're on Stitcher, we're on Spotify. Subscribe if you haven't already. Follow our work on Twitter. Follow my written work. Follow everything that's going on at basketballnews.com. Everyone at the Basketball News Podcast Network. And we will see you, barring another ridiculous trade, we will see you next Monday.